I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County and the east end of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Our regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Connecticut. And our special guest Linda Juca, who is a columnist with Chris of The Basics in the Hartford Current. You especially find it on Thursdays, but you can also find it at The Current online. You can tell your friends no matter where they live. They can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. What a show we have. I can't wait to see what happens. Our new wine challenge, mixing two bottles together, an old wine and a young wine, to see if we can blend at home a better wine overall. Benedetto Baracchi, award-winning wines are in Connecticut now, many, many of them, and we call Northern Italy to talk about some of his creations. Back to work and back to school snacks to keep us all energized, and our lead recipe, the one we're excited about, shrimp-stuffed swordfish rolls topped with lemony breadcrumbs. Absurdly good and all at our website now, foodschmooze.org. Out of the gate, back to work and back to school snacks. We'd like to think that kids and adults would love to have the same things. Our snack master is Linda Juca, Hartford Current columnist and a woman we love. Snack master credentials. That's what you have. From your kids, right?
Yes, from my kids.
I'm going to call them.
Okay.
Well, I know your son. I'm going to ask him very specifically.
I'll ask your cousin, John.
All right.
Okay. So, Linda, what do you have? I've got yogurt popsicles coming up. What do you have?
Good.
Start us
love
out.
Love those. Well, before I start even with specifics, I'd say that this is another case where the pantry, and I'm using the pantry to include the refrigerator, pantry is really important. Keep your pantry stocked. Nuts, almonds, walnuts, I keep them in the freezer so that they last. There's no chance of them going rancid. They're there. Raisins, dried fruit, string cheese or different kinds of cheeses. Because, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, you know, sitting at your computer or doing whatever you're doing, blood sugar starts to drop.
You're ravenous.
You need something fast.
And don't forget cranky.
And cranky.
I'm always cranky. You're always cranky. But right. I get cranky at 3 o'clock.
Well, the body needs fuel, what do they say, every 3-4 hours. And
right.
So everybody has a drop at 3-4 o'clock, some people more than others. And so we need fuel. The body needs fuel every 3-4 hours. And in fact, metabolism doctors say that's actually a great way to eat.
It is.
So
yeah.
These snacks are so interesting. Yeah. To keep us energized, to keep us at peak performance.
Well, true. And you need, I think we're all human, you know, if you have a bit of a sweet tooth, your first inclination is to grab something sweet. I mean, you need some protein. I'm a big peanut butter person.
Me too.
So, you know, I used to do ants on a log for kids.
What was that?
Ants on a log. It's celery sticks with stuff with peanut butter and raisins on top to look like the ants.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then you get your protein and your
and a little
fruit,
bit of sweet.
Right?
And,
wow.
Yeah.
What if
right.
you could use chocolate chips? Instead?
You could use chocolate chips. You could call that cars on a speedway. All
yeah.
That's true. And look, you know, chocolate, dark chocolate, well, you need to eat dark chocolate. Forget the milk chocolate.
No, all the time.
But, you know, we now know that chocolate's really good for us. Thank God.
Mm. Yeah.
So the chips are perfect.
I tried to do a square like you, but my square ends up being like 4 inches by 4 inches.
Oh, I mean, my square just gets, my square of chocolate gets bigger and bigger by the minute. So, Linda, give us a snack idea for whether you're back to school or back to work. Because here we are in this time.
Look, actually, when my kids were just starting school, it was when my husband opened El Forno. So we always had
the restaurant in Old Saybrook, Connecticut.
We always had pizza in the refrigerator. I always brought home pizza for, you know, to warm up the next
How
day.
Lucky.
But and Chris and I have done this a number of times in The Basics. An English muffin is a good vehicle for a little pizza. You know, you melt a little cheese and some tomato, a tortilla, you know, a slice of bread. I mean, and you're done.
Into the toaster oven.
Into the toaster oven.
I saw this done the other day in a magazine with saltines. It was a great idea. Yes, I just looked at it, yeah. And it was just a little square saltine with a teaspoon of tomato sauce on top and then some
Parmesan
mozzarella cheese, and you put it in the little toaster oven. And they're cute little, like, little salty pizzas,
interesting
right?
Interesting idea.
I saw that. I was like, wow, that's another great way
little
to do true. A little
and you can
pizza.
Use, or you could use whole grain crackers.
Sure.
So, let's break that down. Let's unpack that suitcase. So it's like
face eyes are popping out.
No, what we're talking about is, Linda, talk with me about this, because we're talking about texture, a base
right
in that texture,
right.
If you can. We're talking about protein, maybe a little bit of sugar squeaked in there for pleasure,
right.
And some carbs somewhere in there. So you've got a kind of complete.
It's everything. It's the four groups. It's everything.
Okay.
And, you know, and just to take that cracker, whatever kind of cracker, probably even a rice cake would work.
Sure.
You know, spread a little bit of the shredded mozzarella on it, a little spoonful of some sauce, or even a slice of fresh tomato, and you know,
olives, whatever the kids like.
Well, yeah. True. They could add on like you add on pizza toppings.
Yeah, you could do anything.
Leaf.
You could say, I'm going to get my protein now from cheese because I'm going to get it from pine nuts or whatever it might be.
But you could take that cracker, and if you're a goat cheese person, you can do a spread of goat cheese. You can put a slice of peach or apple on top, and even put that under the broiler.
Oh, that sounds good.
Just don't eat too many, because then you won't have dinner.
Then you
Well, that's the thing. This is, and here's a question. What makes snack and not a meal is exactly what he's alluding to. It's you've got to, and this is the way I find, you got to make them ahead of time, make a few, all right?
A few.
And then you're not, because it's very easy, especially for me, it's very easy to make that snack into a full time, oh, well, I'm just done for the day. This is dinner. And then you're not hungry, you know, 3 hours later for dinner.
Matt comes home, what's for dinner? I'm not really hungry.
Yeah, I'm not feeling well. No, you just ate, you had 17.
You OD'd on cheese and crackers.
Empty box of Triscuits.
5,000 calories of snacks.
Well, so many pizzas.
So my friend Amy says, surf the feeling. Think of it that way. You're surfing the feeling.
Yeah.
So you've had your snack, let's say, and maybe one or two crackers. You bring one or two crackers. That's all you have if you're at work or at school. But if you're at home at night and you're using these snacks and you have accessibility to like hundreds of them, she will say, surf the urge. So you sit there and you say, oh, there's my urge. And then you let that be and you explore that and you kind of surf that wave of the urge. You don't take action. You just surf the feeling and you go through the feeling.
I'd be surfing it all the way to the kitchen.
You know what? The other day I did this. I thought, I'm going to try this. I came out the other side of the wave, and I did not go get the thing. It's very interesting.
Really? Wow. Oh, I thought you were going to say that you're kind of surfing to figure out exactly what's going to satisfy the craving.
No, that's menu shopping. Yeah. No,
is this on a Ritz or on a Triscuit?
Right.
Crunch.
No, this is surfing the urge to have another one or another 10.
Oh, okay.
Or another
right.
Like urge to have something, you know, that's maybe not the best for you. Surf the urge.
Yeah, because
the other thing is to resist the temptation to just sit there while you're making them, to just keep eating as you're making them. If you can make them, make a few, put them on a plate, carry them out of the kitchen.
Take the jars away.
Exactly. And then, you know, you've got to set them out.
Because I'm the one who's
done.
Even eating pizza, eating the ingredients as I'm making
pizza. Well, me too. Yes, right. And then by the time it's made, you're not even hungry anymore.
We're talking about back to work and back to school snacks or late night snacks. These are the snacks we need for that slight lift. And we're trying not to do too much damage. So in our family, one of the things we do is we make these and we eat these year round. These are fresh fruit and yogurt ice pops. And this is so simple. Some blueberries. You can use any fruit you want. You can use blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, sliced bananas, whatever's around, fresh or frozen, whatever you want. And a couple cups of plain yogurt or vanilla yogurt. I think the plain is better because it doesn't have sugar in it. And then you have paper cups if you don't have popsicle holders and popsicle sticks. And you put the blueberries or fruit of any kind and the yogurt and the Greek style, you know, thick yogurt, and a little touch of sugar into a blender. And you cover and blend that. If you don't want to use too much sugar, you can cut that back or don't use it at all. Blend it in the blender until it's... We like to keep our fruit kind of chunky. And then we fill these paper cups or our plastic containers 3/4 full. And what we add at the last second before filling, chocolate chips, yes. Dark chocolate chips, because there's not more additional sugar in those. And then if you're doing this in paper cups, you put a little strip of aluminum foil on the end of the cup, and then you poke your popsicle stick through the center of that foil on each cup. You put those in the freezer for 5 hours, so I would say overnight. And then you serve them. You just take the foil off, peel off the paper cup, and you are good to go. Or if you've got a popsicle maker, that's great. Quickly, before we end this segment, Lindy, have you got another one?
Well, or Chris? Building on the yogurt idea, because I still eat this all the time, and a lot of times I eat this for lunch. Greek yogurt, I put a little maple syrup and cinnamon, and then I layer, or actually I throw it all in. You can make a fancy parfait if you want to, but granola, fresh fruit, and the yogurt. Yep. You're done.
You got all. You got everything.
It's really good. It's a little bit sweet, tart. It's great.
Crunchy. Okay.
Chris,
crunchy.
What do you have?
See, I'm going to keep going with the cheese thing because that's my go-to snack, and I like making these little quesadillas. So I take corn tortillas, and I just sprinkle a little cheese, and then I just, like Linda said about the pantry, I go to the pantry, maybe find some beans, or I go to the fridge and see what's left over in there, maybe some chicken from the night before, slap the other tortilla on top, put it in the toaster oven, cut it into little wedges, and then take it. And if you use the little 6-inch tortillas, one is a perfect size snack.
Okay. Sounds good. I like to take grapes and blueberries and freeze them. And they make, it's just a fun little different spin on some fruit.
What do? You just, and then you take them out as if they're popsicles.
Right, but you, yes. So
in
you
a bowl frozen, or you yep. just a little bowl yep. of those?
And so you have frozen grapes and that's frozen blueberries.
You can use orange juice
that
as milk.
Year, yes. Do you do that year round?
Or I do.
Do you do that?
Yes, it just makes things a little different and offers a different selection.
Okay. Wow, I like that.
It's good. Other than cookies.
Good. You know what, good. You know what's also good and easy is pretzels and Nutella.
Right.
Oh. Salty pretzels.
Where's our protein?
And the little Nutella.
You know, sometimes you just give me a little protein.
Nutella has hazelnuts.
Because I eat Nutella out of the jar, like peanut butter. And then I try to surf the sensation.
Surf with the Nutella in your mouth.
And when we say
you can't
butter,
eat the whole jar.
We mean almond butter, any kind of butter, because we know there are allergies out there. So whatever works for your family. Okay, back to school, back to work snacks. And we have the most amazing recipe coming up for shrimp stuffed swordfish. We have an amazing wine test for you, mixing an old wine and a new wine to give you really fabulous, probably very expensive wine mix for your house. You can do this at home. So stay with us.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to Cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for being with us. And as you know, the Food Schmooze is heard here on WNPR Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon, all over the world. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Eugenia Matruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, our special guest Linda Juca of the Hartford Courant, where she is a columnist. And we thank you first and foremost for listening. I cannot wait to do this. We're talking now about Baraki Vineyard, which is in Cortona. This is in northern Italy. This is in Tuscany. This is a beautiful estate. They have a Relais and Chateau Hotel and restaurants. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous property. And these wines that the Baracchi family make are now about, 13, 18 of their wines are now available in our region. So very, very exciting. So I'm talking about Connecticut and New York, I think Massachusetts and Rhode Island. I want to talk to a family member, and this is Benedetto Baracchi. And welcome to the Fuchsmoos party.
Hello, good morning, everybody.
Okay, very nice to be with you. So may I call you, I know you are called Benny, but I can't bring myself to call you Benny. So may I call you Benedetto?
No, it's best. Call me in the way you prefer. No.
Okay, my darling.
Or sweetie.
Okay, sweetie. So tell me, because we all sense, we're about to taste this wine. We have tasted it before, to be honest. And these Baracchi wines, let me spell that for you, Baracchi. You will see
right.
This on our website and find out all about it, what you need to say at your wine store to get these wines.
And I am so jealous that you have the wine, and I forget my glass in my house.
I know, I'm so sorry. Sometimes we like to have virtual tasting by phone or online, by Skype, and so. But I think you know this wine. So this is the 2012 O'Lilio. So it's O'Lilio, and it's
O'Lilio. I know it's a strange name, but after I will explain you why, if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
The tradition of my family, as you told, and your explanation was more than wonderful, come from a very old tradition of hunting with falcons. Oh, so also the name of my property is called, where I have the hotel and the restaurant, is called Il Falconiere. So my family name is Baracchi, so we named the winery Baracchi because it's our name. But we would like to give some kind of relation with the falconery. So O'Lilio, for example, is the name of one of my falcon. For example, we have Smeriglio, that is another kind of falcon, or Astore, or Ardito, that is the character. So everything, any of my name, the name of my wines, is related to the falcon.
That's a beautiful story, and there is a gorgeous falcon on the label, and I need to get to the wine. We've got this in our glasses, but I'm on the falcons. Yes. How do you hunt with them? Do you point them on? I know they sit on your arm, right? And then you point them in the direction of the prey. How does this work?
Usually, I use the falcon to get women closer.
It's working so far.
No, I'm joking, sorry. No, that is not so easy. You have to train a falcon. The falcon is your pet. But the falcon really, the falcon is wild. It's the most, it's the wildest animal you can have, probably. And really, he don't like you. He know that your hand give him food. So he will come to your hand, but not to other hands, just to the hand that is feeding him. So you train the falcon since he's very, very young, and as long as he gets more close to you, and when you make him fly, but always angry, because if he had food too early, like before, he will not come back anyway.
So bye-bye.
He's full. He's had enough. He's
we have a radar to find him in the wood. He can fly away for 30 miles, 50 miles, so... Sometimes we lost falcons. It's very easy to lost a falcon.
That must break your heart when it is a beautiful falcon or one that you have loved or bonded with. That must break your heart.
Yes. It's happened to us already a few times. A couple of times we lost them. Another time was stolen. So falcon is it's a passion that take a lot of time, eh? Because it's not like the dog also that you leave the food in the ground. The falcon always have to eat from your hand, and the falcon eat every day.
Let me talk to you about this wine. This is, join me in this, my guests here. I love this wine. It is what I like about Baraki, because I've been tasting different ones, and we're going to get to those in later shows. What I love about this vineyard is that these are real wines. These are wines that have not been manipulated, especially in ways that are poisonous or dangerous to us or taste chemical in any way. These are real wines. And this has a beautiful complex of flavors. Mm. If you're doing something on the grill or roasting in the oven, that time is going to come. This is a beautiful, a pizza wine. Oh, my God. This is a gorgeous, gorgeous wine. And I'm telling you, this is $20 and under here in our region. So an amazing bargain. Benedetto, it is 25% Merlot, 25% Sangiovese, 25% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 25% Syrah. Are these grapes from your estate, or are they from various places?
Total, I have about 30 hectares, 75 acres, I think, mm-hmm. more or less.
Yep.
We grow our own, of course, we just use our own grapes. I don't buy any wine or any grape from other states. So
you control
my
everything.
Production is not too big, but is enough for our needs.
Let's taste this. I'm going to thank you for pouring into the glass. Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Producing step. I know. I apologize to you, sir. Okay, so we just tasted this earlier with what we made, these gorgeous, actually from an Italian grandmother whose home recipe is swordfish rolled around shrimp and chopped swordfish with
tomato.
Breadcrumbs and tomato.
Yeah,
it was very beautiful from another part of Italy. And so
the wine went so, so well.
It was beautiful. You would think this had too much structure for something like that, but it is so flexible and beautiful. Mm.
Red wine and fish.
Well, and swordfish is a meaty fish.
Yeah.
So.
Oof.
Here's what I would love to say to you about this wine, one of the reasons that I love it. And everybody join in, Linda and Chris and Lori and Alex. I am getting the what we call the tannins. And it's almost like you had a little tea bag on your tongue for a moment on the sides of your tongue. That is a representation of structure in the wine. It's a signal that this wine is going to have enough structure for a wide range of foods.
Yep.
And so that is a beautiful thing. When you start blending in, as they do at the vineyard, with this recipe of these other grapes that they grow personally, and the winemaker there is standing there, and this has to do with the climate of the season. This has to do with what's in the soil. This has to do with when they pick them in terms of ripeness. These things that in the end are a kind of sensual recipe, that's what winemakers and family members are doing when they're tasting and testing. And that bottle comes to us here, straight from Italy. This is not a manipulated wine. This is the real thing. And it is a beautiful,
gorgeous,
beautiful thing.
Gorgeous,
there is
gorgeous.
Fruit in here. This tastes like a region to me. Mm-hmm. This tastes like Tuscany. For $20 and under, it's unbelievable as
it's a bargain. Almost a super Tuscan, isn't it? With the blend with the Cab and the Merlot, Sangiovese.
Yes. What I define this wine is more like a baby super Tuscan, because it's not so long aged, not for too long on oak barrel. So usually super Tuscans, they spend 12, 18 months, 24 months in oak barrel. So this is just
a baby
that
super
kind
Tuscan.
Of style, but we try to keep a little bit more freshness.
Because you use a huge tank, the big oak tank.
We use the big oak tank, but just for a couple months. So that is not going to give too much oak sensation. We like to make special wines, so I make many, many different kinds. We have a line, we have about 14 different wines, and More or less, in all of them, you can find the same style, the freshness, the elegance. Olillo is my daddy's super Tuscan, so it's priced that is a little bit more approachable, with a structure that makes the wine more nice to be drink. A glass that's called other glass.
You know, I would have this with steak.
Give you the need to drink another glass.
Oh, I just think about lamb chops on the grill or on the cast iron skillet. Linda, tell me what you think of. I think of steak on the grill. I would even have this with grilled chicken. It's the grill that is going to give me the char that I want to match this wine. But I'll tell you something. This is kind of crazy for many people, but I would just sit and drink this wine.
That's, you know, I'm sitting here. That's exactly what I was
because
thinking.
Because it's a mini Tuscan.
Yeah, I could sit on the porch and just drink a glass of this.
Well, that's why you're cooking.
A baby
you start
Tuscan.
Drinking it.
Yes.
Right? You start, and then you wait for... Whatever you're grilling
at this
to get
price
done.
Point, it's a beautiful, beautiful wine. And wait until I tell you in the coming weeks about the wines as they do go up in price a bit, but they also have increasing complexity. And so if you want a host gift, if you have a special dinner, if you're someone who can afford to do this, we're going to introduce you to some beautiful, beautiful wines. So, Benedetto, how do these wines age in the bottle, in casks?
This wine, actually, it's not a wine, and it's not made to be a wine for very, very long aging. We speak about 8 to 10 years maximum of use for this wine. So,
I'm amazed that... No, wait a minute, because I am amazed that for... Under $20, you could age a wine for 5 years.
Yeah.
Is astounding. You know, I mean, that's the craziest thing.
It's real.
I meant, are you aging them at your vineyard?
It's important to understand about the way we are. I'm speaking about all my wines. That the selection in the vineyard is so powerful that we leave just one bunch for each shoot of the plant.
Yeah.
No? So the concentration of this wine is higher than many other of his level, probably. And that make that it takes a longer time to evolve, to get better, but that make as well that take longer time to come down. So this is a wine that I suggest to be drink now. This is the perfect moment to be drink. But if we have palate that prefer wine a little bit more aged, this could be a middle class that could be fine.
Yeah.
So this is like what we were talking about earlier, where these wines have so much structure that they can withstand a few years or 5 years or 8 years and before they start softening up. But I mean, we're drinking.
So on the plant, Benedetto was saying that one bunch of grapes.
So to get really high quality fruit, it's expensive if you drop all the fruit. So as a wine grower who's trying to grow volume, they'll leave a lot more fruit on. And then each fruit is getting less of the sugars from the leaves.
Less concentration.
And it's more watery.
Yes.
The more expensive way to do it is to cut all the fruit before it ripens so that you only have a few bunches on the vine.
So you're pinching back.
You'll do a cutback, and what you're left with is so more concentrated, so much more flavorful, so much richer. And then the wine, incidentally, you know, it's going to be so much better. But it's much more expensive. I mean, to go through and drop half of your fruit, you've just cut your profits by half, right?
But that's the route he's taking.
Actually. So...
Yes, and
do the green harvest.
Green harvesting.
Linda Juca is saying to us that this is the route your family is taking. And did that ever require courage? Or is this always, going back a long, long time, has this always been the way your family has done things at the vineyard?
That is the big difference between quality and quantity.
Yep.
Right.
That the same philosophy, I think, work in many other kind of industries, probably.
Yep.
So you can't get everything. Of course, at first, the only small problem that for me is not a problem because I like wine a little bit more powerful could be that you have an higher alcoholicity because you are going to have more sugar, less water, so the sugar will make more alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to do quality...
Not a problem for us, right? the higher alcohol one.
Yes, the higher alcohol. I usually don't do wine under 14, so it's difficult for me to go under 14.
Why?
Because I use the same parameter for the, to select the grapes for all my wine. Mm. So a few bunches make that the concentration of sugar per bunch go a little higher. We speak about 24 bricks, and so usually I am around 14, 15, 14.5. But that's because if you want to do quality, of course, sugar is part of that process too.
And since he owns all the vines, he can actually do that versus if he were to buy grapes. The farmer wants to produce as much as they can, but they're his, so he can do whatever
he has
you want.
Control over every aspect.
Benedetto Baracchi, I know that you are going to join us on the show in the future. I'm excited that your wines are available. These are real wines, beautiful wines, at a wide range of price points in our region. And we're going to tell people how to get them. This is posted at our website, Faith Middleton Fuchmu. .org, and thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
It was a great pleasure for me, and I will be very soon in Connecticut to say hi personally.
Thank you, my friend. You know, we're thinking of coming to see you. I'm so impressed with these wines. We're thinking of coming to see you to do a show right at the vineyard. Would you be open to that?
Depend. If you bring a present, yes.
We'll help you look for your lost falcons.
I believe the
my
present
for you will be open every day, and you can come whenever you want.
Thank you. I mean it. These are great. Thank you so much. All right. Be well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, the reason we went on with this conversation is to say that you can see the combination of intellect and sensuality and passion. And, you know, so in other words, intellect and emotion that goes into making a wine that is a real wine.
And you can taste it in the wine.
It's not just about the money. This wine, I guess because it's maybe because there's so many different grapes in this particular wine. How is he able to produce this wine at this price if he's taking the more expensive
process?
I bet
they've owned the vineyard forever.
They own the real estate.
They've been there a long time.
Right.
Yeah. But it's gorgeous, by the way.
These are the kind of wines, though, that you want to learn to like, in the sense that if you don't like it immediately, right, it's an acquired taste. But you want to learn to like something that's so authentic, because it's like having your grandmother's apple pie made that's real with little slightly burnt edges. And that's the real thing. So this is, you know, it might be an acquired taste for certain people, but it's worth learning to like something that's so real. Yeah. This is real wine.
Yeah. Oh, sure it is. And the color is incredible.
And Lynn DeJuca, these are your people.
I know.
This is your
thing. Nothing like the Italians.
No. It's just so good. All right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to our next segment, and we're very excited about that. So stay with us. You're not going to believe what you're going to hear. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, cocktails we feature, including the wine we just discussed, right now or anytime online at fuchmoos.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Apple Band Dottie, I never get enough. for that wonderful star.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and that gang includes Linda Juca, who is a columnist with Chris Brosberry of The Basics, the Hartford Current column that appears on Thursdays and online. I love these two for their devotion to home cooks, to explaining in the most careful way how we do things, not how restaurants do things, how to break things down, caring about how things taste, all the things that I care about, too. I just love what they do. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. Alex Province is here. Lori Mack is here. Thank you to Jonathan McNichol, our producer. So here's what we have coming up. Two things. Our lead recipe, which is killer, and that is a shrimp-stuffed swordfish roll that has a textured, buttery, lemony breadcrumb on the top. And we've just thought of a new thing to do with it that would make it just like fall to your knees good. So stay with us for that. We want to put a little lemon zest in there and maybe wrap it in a little prosciutto. That recipe is on our website right now, foodschmooze.org. And we're going to start with this wild experiment. And it's something that I have tried. This is blending wine out of bottles at home. This is what winemakers do. They do blends. But you can do it at home to rescue the wine you have, and we're going to explain how in just a second. So what happens is sometimes you've got an old wine hanging around that, because it's been around a long time, it gets a little flabby, it gets a little weak, you don't taste the fruit in it anymore, meaning the berries. Okay, if that's the case, you can rescue that wine, because as that wine ages, it also, as people do, has these assets that are kind of soft and lovely, and there's an intelligence about them. But what happens if you give the kind of muscly power back of a youthful wine and you mix those two together? What would make sense about doing that? Because you could pick any wines of any bottles, and it's chaos out there. We're suggesting, what if you did this with wines from one region? I don't care what country you're in, the same region. So we tried it with wines from Rioja in Spain, because they're more affordable. And let's go. Let's start this thing. Okay, so Alex Province.
So we took a really old Rioja that we actually kind of liked on its own. And then we thought, let's blend in like a younger, you know, simpler, under $10 bottle of wine from the same region. So we took this antique, you know, old Rioja from the late 90s, and it was actually pretty gorgeous on its own.
I know. We unfortunately picked experience. One that we don't want to touch. But honestly, there are some that are, you know, we've had them together where they're old and they
get soft and a little,
so soft,
you know, they
and
lose
go,
a little.
Oh, you're a little slightly disappointed. You know?
And, you know, so it's an acquired taste. Some of the older wines lose some of their fruit, and some people just really love that fruit. So when the fruit's gone, they're like, oh, the wine's no good anymore. But that's the wine still, to many people, really delicious. A lot of people like these older wines.
I
but
love
if you're
them.
Someone who likes, you know, wine that's fruitier and still has structure, and maybe you bought too much of this wine, it's in your basement, you can go to the same exact region. Why not exist?
You know how you have hundreds of cases of old gorgeous wine in your cellar. You just know.
Let's
you
just
do.
Say theoretically you had some old wine, didn't know what to do with it. You could go to the same region, buy, you know, I just went to my favorite wine shop and said, do you have a you know, a simple Rioja? Gave me one that was $9.99. We blended it 50-50. And just like you said, Faith, it gave the older, softer wine its structure back. And now it's 1 + 1 = 3. You ended up with this old wine, which was good. Actually, this one was great, but let's just say it was fine with the new wine. And now you have the equivalent of two bottles that are, you know, this wonderful blend instead of throwing it away. Or
it actually made the new wine even better.
Even really. Better.
So Chris did a mix that I particularly loved where he had the original old wine and he mixed it with one of our wines, and it had this fruit in it, you know, that kind of Bing cherry quality still, but also this smoky quality from the young wine
Too real
that was
about
so
10 years
amazing.
In age. Yeah.
So listen, let's say that you don't have a cellar filled with old bottles or a wine cave where you've got old bottles sitting around and they feel kind of flabby. Yeah, let's say you don't have
I did this the other day because I had a wine in my house that was a Christmas present. And it was an okay wine. It wasn't anything special. It was just a, you know, I was like, So I opened it up because I wanted to try it. And I was like, I didn't have, you know, I was like, and I tasted it a little bit. And I was like, I don't know. It was just didn't have much, but it had a lot of fruit, like almost too much fruit for me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like one of those California Pinot kind of
fruit bomb.
Yeah, like a fruit bomb. Yes, a fruit
bomb.
That would
be a Zinfandel.
I was like, but it was a good quality wine, right? It wasn't a bad wine. It was just too fruity for me. Yeah. So I put the cork back in it. And when I was at work, I was thinking about that wine sitting on my counter. And I thought, well, if I took something else and blended it with that, because that was so much fruit. So if I took a wine that didn't have much fruit that maybe was
more
very
structured.
More structured, diluted, I diluted and it
half
was
and half
well
kind of
and this is the thing, and I sat on the couch and I put both bottles of wine on the coffee table, I grabbed a glass and I just went back and forward, right? So I started out with the real fruit bomb, and then I started adding maybe 2 tablespoons, 3 tablespoons in the bottom of the glass, and then I kind of added it till I got it to where I enjoyed it. And then I noted in my head about how much, and then I poured myself a glass of it.
Did you add any brandy?
No, but see, you could have because now you're fortified. And I think this is the thing.
No, what was
so
that? That was
you make a port almost.
You make a port almost.
Oh, right.
So here's the question.
One of these old wines, add a couple shots of brandy.
And you have port.
It's a whole other
area. Why can't we blend things?
Yeah, who says you can't?
That's what I'm saying. Who says you can't?
And Linda,
because
you
I don't think anybody's – well, I don't know. I would think that I'm the average person. I don't think people think about it. The only time I've ever blended wines is when I've had a couple of inches in a couple of bottles, and I've dumped them into one because I've cooked something with wine.
I thought you were going to say I've had a couple of glasses of wine.
Well, no.
I was going to say, just pour it in. It's okay. But even if you had old white wine, you have last year's Sauvignon Blanc. Like you bought too much, and a lot of these whites need to be drunk that same year. So it's a year old. Blend in some fresher, you know, white wine to it.
I
That's
know
a good
why.
Idea.
I know why, though. I know why, because I was at a wine tasting, and this was one of those foofy wine tastings, and we tasted, I think we tasted 9 wines, right? And I, you know, dabbled and I tasted, but I had like a little bit left of each wine in glasses because we had all the glasses, right? And I was like, and then we were done. And I wasn't going to go to work, and I was going to go out to dinner afterwards, and I was like, you know what? So I went one by one, and I started dumping them. And
together.
The looks from the wine what I call the wine police, and those are the wine snobbery people that are like, oh! And, you know, and the sommeliers from other restaurants were like, oh, you're doing it in front of winemakers. And I swirled it around, and I drank it. They were all reds, and I thought it was quite a nice blend.
Yeah. So here's the question. Yes, exactly, Alex. If
thank
you liked
you.
It.
And I did like
but
it.
But was that an accident because your blend happened to go together? Because we were in the back, we started fooling around and we were mixing this with that and this with that, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. So did you?
But these were all similar wines. These were all the same kind of wine from different regions. So it was the same blend of grapes, right?
Oh,
so I thought no harm.
So
right,
a unifying thing.
Unifying, but the looks of the people were, and guaranteed no more invitations for Chris,
it's a wine
tasting.
I doubt that.
I guarantee it because they were just shocked and appalled. And why would you do that? Ruining in the. But I liked it. It was a nice glass of wine.
You know,
and then I went to dinner.
So we think that blending has to come from vineyards, right, Linda? So that you have to. But it, of course, and we fall down with respect for people who are professionals, schooled in this, studied a long time, who have beautiful palates. And they know how to mix all those qualities to come up with these great wines. Oh, my goodness. They're just so smart at what they do. We bow down to you. And at the same time, almost to give you a respect for what they do, it is really fun to blend these things out of a bottle at home. Now this new idea that Alex has, add a little brandy and you've got
and
a port.
Right.
Wow.
Or how about making your own Bordeaux? Taking a Cabernet Sauvignon, a Merlot, and maybe a Cab Franc, and, you know, maybe from the same region, and blend them all to make a Bordeaux blend.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to talk now about this cookbook, which is called Nonna's House, N-O-N-N-A, which this is the name for grandmother in Italian, really. And there's a restaurant on Staten Island. And there's this guy, Joe, his full name is Jody Scaravella. And he leaves Brooklyn, where he had all this great Italian neighborhood stuff going on. And he's Italian, obviously. He misses it. He goes to Staten Island and he sees this storefront and he thinks, oh my God, can I open a restaurant? I miss it so much. I'm going to open a restaurant. What does this guy do? He goes online and he posts an ad saying, if he had a choice of going to a Michelin-starred restaurant or what grandmothers make, he said, I'm going for the grandmothers. So he posts an ad online and said, would any grandmothers like to come and cook at this restaurant? Well, they do. And he opens 10 of them, he chooses, and he opens Enoteca Maria on Staten Island, still exists, and now they have a book called Nona's House.
That's
and this
awesome.
Is their best restaurant. I mean,
and
their best
grandmothers
recipes.
Are their chefs.
Yes,
that
and they
is
rotate,
awesome.
And it's so unbelievable. So, Chris, what we just ate, which is so fabulous, yes, they do, which is so fabulous. Yeah. We can't resist this. We started fooling around with this recipe.
How about a little of this and a little
yeah,
bit of that?
Yeah.
But the base recipe is great.
Okay, so we're going to tell you. These are shrimp-stuffed swordfish rolls. If mm-hmm. you cut the swordfish horizontally in a very thin way, you can roll it up. It turns
about a quarter
out.
Inch
and
thick.
That's also cost effective because mm-hmm. you can get a steak and get much more out of it. And who needs, you know, 14 pounds of fish at every serving?
Yep.
But the inside's fantastic. What do you see? And then we start to fool around just because it's irresistible. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
All right, so let's start with the filling. Right? And the filling is extra virgin olive oil, a couple tablespoons, fresh breadcrumb, shrimp, and they use really small shrimp, which are cool. And then when you're doing your swordfish and you're cutting it into those little, like, quarter-inch slabs, you trim a little bit to make them into these triangles or these rectangles, and you trim a little bit, and you're looking to get about 2 ounces of swordfish to mince up. So it's swordfish
from
the leftovers, from the trim to making these little right mm-hmm. rectangle
things.
You're
gonna.
So we've
got shrimp in there.
Yep.
We've got breadcrumbs, and
yep.
we've got
and
the
then,
chopped up
and then
swordfish.
Some chopped up plum tomato
pieces, mm.
a good amount of lemon juice, some flat leaf parsley, minced garlic, salt and pepper.
Hmm. And you make
a
stuffing.
Paste. Yeah, so you put this all in a bowl, and you make this like paste out of it. Right? So it all comes together and it's really cool. You can make a little like ball out of it.
What did we do with the swordfish steak?
Okay, so the swordfish steaks now, we're going to take and we're going to make quarter.
So you get a steak at the fish market.
Yep, about a pound.
In the recipe, they say you can buy this big fat loin of swordfish. And maybe in Italy or, you know, chefs do that. But we get steak. So Chris, how do we get the swordfish to go into a form where we can actually roll it? Because we
right.
buy a steak
So if you buy this big steak, first you're going to take it and cut it horizontally into, I'm going to say if it's an inch thick, you're going to cut half-inch pieces, right? So right down the middle.
Okay, so we've got 2 half-inch steaks.
Okay, then you're going to cut it down the middle, so you end up with four of these
four
pieces.
Four half-inch
yeah.
steaks,
all right?
Okay.
Because you want half-inch, and you want pieces that you can actually roll.
Good, okay.
Right? And then you take your filling, you divide that into whatever the amount of steaks you have, and you fill it, and then you roll it. And then with the seam side, you put that seam size down into a casserole
dish. If you need, you could use toothpicks.
Totally,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I did it, and it holds together pretty good as long as you do seam
you just
size
put a little
down.
Bit of filling. A
little bit of filling, seam okay. side down into the thing,
now,
slice
the
some tomato. Now,
the had breadcrumbs in it.
Yep.
And lemon and all that mm-hmm. good stuff. So are there any breadcrumbs on the
then
top?
Then you just take breadcrumbs and olive oil once you get it in the pan mm-hmm. with fresh tomato, right? You put fresh. So you take one of these pieces of fish, then a slice of tomato. I did wedges.
Oh.
And then fish, tomato
in
around.
In your
casserole
dish.
And then you sprinkle breadcrumbs over the top and then just a good liberal drizzle of olive oil, and then it goes in a 400 degree oven until it's
so wow
way,
it was
it
so good. All right, the Food Schmooze on WNPR is Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails we feature at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.